Hello, and welcome to this episode of Breakpoint. Today we're going to be talking about Visual Studio Team Services, which is Microsoft's platform for DevOps, for all intents and purposes. My name is Paul LaBerge. I'm a Cloud Application Development Solution Specialist at Microsoft, and my intention today is to go through an end-to-end demo of the VSTS platform as it relates to building out applications and pushing them to the cloud. So for that, what we're going to talk about is we're going to talk specifically around starting off the process by working with work. So the ability to create work items within VSTS and track the work that you see within that. Then we're going to go through and actually do some things around developer productivity, specifically what we see within Visual Studio 2017 to help developers build great applications. Then we're going to move on to VSTS again and talk about continuous delivery, which is a term that is commonly used for automated build and automated release. So I'm going to show you exactly how that kind of works. And then we're going to do some things around testing, and then finally monitoring and getting telemetry from your production environments to finish everything off. So without further ado, let's move forward. So what I'm going to be discussing today is something called Visual Studio Team Services. You may see also on this slide that there's something called Team Foundation Server, TFS for short. And the difference between the two is that TFS, which has been around since 2005, is a on-premises solution that we have brought to our customers since 2005. The most recent version as of the recording of this session is TFS 2017 Update 2. And the equivalent of that in the cloud is something called Visual Studio Team Services, which I alluded to, called which is also known as VSTS. And you can think of VSTS as a TFS as a service. So instead of you installing TFS on premises on a virtual machine or a physical box in your data center, we host it. We, as in Microsoft, host it on your behalf as a customer. So we worry about things such as uptime, scalability, security, those types of things. And we make sure that everything is up and running for you, and you can focus on the things that are most valuable to you and your customer base, which is building great solutions to help your customers get the answers that they need. Regardless of which version that you choose, whether you choose TFS or VSTS, you see everything in the middle there. That is what you get. They are very much similar from a function standpoint as well as from an experience standpoint, as long as you're using the most recent version of TFS, because VSTS and the most recent version of TFS at any point in time are pretty much the same thing. But if you're using an older version of TFS, it will look and behave slightly different or vastly different depending on the version that you're using to what VSTS is. So just keep that in mind. In this demo, I'm going to be using VSTS to show you the capabilities. So without further ado, let's actually get to this. And to do this, I'm going to use this matrix, if you will, that sort of shows the various different stages, if you want to call it that, of software development. And I have a number of different roles, and the roles are color-coded, and you'll see as we build out this little graph, what parts or which roles are most appropriate for each of these tasks. Now, I'm not saying that these are the only roles or hats, if you will, that are available within a software project, but you could probably map most of the roles that you see on your software projects to something similar to what we see here. So let's move forward. So the first thing we need to do is actually work with the actual application for creating work associated with it. Specifically, what we're going to do is we're going to create a task within Visual Studio Team Services and move it to active as part of this. So let's actually move forward. But before I do anything else, what I want to do is I'm going to show you the application that I built. So in this case, the application that I built is a ASP.NET MVC application hosted in Microsoft Azure. But this could have equally been a Java-based application or a Node.js or PHP application hosted on Linux or even a Macintosh or even Windows, for example, on-premises as well. It can be hosted on any cloud platform as well. The intent here is that regardless of what the platform or the application language that you're using, VSTS can support that. I've just chosen ASP.NET MVC because I like the platform and C# because I enjoy that language. So the application that I built is a fictitious sports league draft pick generator or simulator. So if you think about it, I'm you might be in a situation where you like sports. I like sports, for example. And if you take a look at professional sports leagues out there, they sometimes have algorithms to determine who gets that coveted first pick of the draft. And the draft is basically a picking mechanism where teams can pick rookies that are just joining the league. And, you know, getting that first pick is a big deal because it means that you can get the most talented young individual that is joining the league at that point in time. So in order to get that first pick, I've created an algorithm that gives you a percentage chance of actually each of the teams in the league of actually getting that that first pick. Very simple. All I have to do here is I have to click on draft run. And what will happen is it'll actually execute the draft run and we see the results here. Now, the way I've implemented this algorithm is we have four ping pong balls, and each of these ping pong balls has a number between the, 1 and 14 on them. And depending on the combination of those ping pong balls, it will determine who actually gets the first pick of the draft. So let's move through this and see what happens. So the first draft ball is number 3, and you can see I have these fictitious teams that I've sort of set up, and these are the teams that are currently in the running for the pick. So based on the first ball, that's the teams that are currently available. The second ball is 8. And you can see here the teams have been whittled down a little bit, so we have a few teams that have actually been taken out of the running. The third one, so now we're down to 3. So it's either the Dorval Boucheron, the London Blizzard, or the Saskatoon Wheat Barons. So let's find out who actually won. In this case, it was the Dorval Boucheron that won, based on this combination. So fairly simple application, and you can see it's got this nice look and feel and things like that. But maybe what we need to do, or what the user community has brought back from a feedback standpoint, is they're saying that they like this look and feel of the blue and white, but they really wish that they could get something a little bit more dark. So, you know, this idea of having dark backgrounds and things like that is easier on the eyes. So that's what we're going to do. So we've heeded the calls of feedback from our end user community, and they have asked us to change the look and feel. So that's the change that we're going to be making within this. So in order to do that, let's actually move to VSTS. So I'm in my team dashboard, as you can see right here, for my team project. And you can see that there's a number of things here. So I happen to be using the Agile methodology. And within VSTS, you can use Agile, Scrum, or CMMI, which is a standardized version of Waterfall. Or you can create your own methodology as well. It's really up to you. Now you can see that I have a very busy dashboard here, which is my overview dashboard, and that's really depending on exactly what is important to me and my team. Now you can also see, and I'll zoom in a little bit here so you can see this, I've decided to create a bunch of other dashboards like the dev team, the test team, operations. I've even created a mobile channel dashboard as well so that teams that are involved with the mobile application that I built for this can actually take a look at that as well. So in this case, what we're going to do is we're going to skip over the dashboard but you see that there's some visualizations there. And instead, we're going to go right to work and we're going to go specifically to the backlogs. So if you're not familiar with what a backlog is a list of things that have been prioritized by the project team based on user feedback, based on business directives, all those types of things that might be important for a team to actually implement. And that might include things like bug fixes as well, not just requirements. So let's take a look at this. So you can see that we've actually gone into the Kanban board. Now, a Kanban board, you might be familiar with it. You may have been in situations where you've walked by a development team in your office and you see all these sticky notes on a wall and they're basically, those sticky notes are in columns and things of that. That's basically a physical version of a Kanban board. And a Kanban board basically is used to allow teams to view the flow of work from one state to the next so that they can identify any sort of bottlenecks throughout the process. There's lots of good theory and content around Kanban that might be very interesting to you. I'm not going to go through that today, but it might be worth your while looking into. Now, specifically what we're going to see here is my business analyst has created this requirement or user story, if you will. It's saying that as a user, the look and feel of the web application should look fresh and or feel fresh and new. So the requirement has already been set up, or the user story has already been set up for me. Now what I need to do is I need to create, for example, a task which is associated to this user story so that we can actually track the work going from one state to the next as we move it from one environment to the next throughout the testing and production lifecycle. So let's actually do that. By clicking on this plus button, I can create a new item. And by creating this new item, what I'll say is I'll say create a new look and feel that has a dark gray background with, spelled that wrong, so let's change that, background with orange highlights. Okay, so that's basically the new task that is associated to this. Now, if I go into this, you'll see here, for example, there's a few things. One, you can see that there's a description area. So I can say, you know, description goes here. So whatever the description happens to be, and you can make it as explicit or as detailed as you want it to be. It's really up to you. Now you can see a bunch of other things here, and we're going to go through some of these things. First, you can see that it's been automatically assigned to myself because I actually created this, but I can send this and create this as part of anybody on my team if I want to. What you can also see here is that we have related work. Now I'll zoom in a little bit just so you can see this. So you can see that this user story is related to the task that we just created. Now that's something that you might expect, and unfortunately the hover over here shows this, but right here you would basically be able to see something called parent. So basically this is saying that the task that I just created is a child to this user story. So there's a relationship between those things. And if I want to take a look at this relationship in a way that is a little bit more easy to understand, what I can do is I can basically go here, click on the ellipsis, and I can go to the visualize area here. Now, this visualization is not something that's built into VSTS, and we'll talk about this. This is an extension, and there's a new extension model with VSTS that allows you to extend the capabilities and the functionality of the tool to meet the needs of you and your team. So in this case, what you can see is that we have a task that we created, and it is basically related to this user story because the user story is apparent to this task. Now, it's not just a picture. You can see here, if I click on this, we have the ability to see that this user story is a child of this parent, which is a feature. So you have a dynamic view of how different work is related to other work. And as I said before, this is not built into the tool itself, but it's actually an extension that we can get from the Visual Studio Marketplace, which I'll show you in a little bit. So just bear that in mind while we go through the rest of this. The other thing that you'll notice is that we have other things. So you see here, for example, a discussion area. Common complaint that we've heard from development teams and software delivery teams, not just development teams, but anybody associated with software delivery, is that knowledge gets lost. And one of the things that we've tried to implement to help with that is this discussion area. Now, this discussion area is a powerful part of any sort of work item, whether it's a user story, a product backlog item, requirement, task, bug, test case, whatever it is that you have, that allows you to have a discussion about this specific item and keep the knowledge within VSTS. So in this case, what I can do is I can say, hey, @, and I use the @ symbol, it brings up everybody on the list of the actual project. I can say, I want Marco to be involved with this. Did you review this? And then I could say and then if I use the pound key, it actually brings up a list of suggested user stories that might be similar, or I can type in the specific ID number of it. In this case, we'll just say, for example, I'll click on this one, and then I can basically at this point save this. And what's going to happen is that Marco is going to get a notification on email that there is a comment about this specific task, and he can come in and actually reply to it if he wants to. Now, the other thing that's interesting is that was a change that we made to this task, but what we can also do is if I own this task like I do right now because I'm the owner, I've been assigned to it, if I want to make sure that I know of every single change that happens to this, so things that might be related to this task, but I don't necessarily do myself, I can click on the follow button. And if I click on that follow button, what will happen is that any change to this task, whether it's a change of state, if work is associated to it, if somebody creates a comment to in the discussion area, I'll get notified on email as well. So I'm always in the know of exactly what's going on. Now, what's also interesting is you can see here, if I click on the history, one of the things that's most powerful about this is that every single change that is made to this task or any work item within VSTS is logged and auditable. So everything from the inception of the actual task in this case to anything that happens to it, whether I'm adding a discussion item or adding a link to it, it is all provided here so that you always have visibility into exactly what's changed, who made the change, when the change was made, and what the details of those changes are. So you always have access to that. Now let's actually get out of this. And the other thing that I'm going to mention here is we're going to go and drag and drop this into active because we're going to do some development on it. So once we've done that, we're going to move on to development. But I did mention that there was that visualization diagram that I showed you, and that was an extension to Visual Studio Team Services. I want to show you how you can get extensions to Visual Studio Team Services now, because this is a really important and very powerful component of how Visual Studio Team Services works. So you can see here, there is a shopping bag, and this shopping bag icon has a link to something called Browse Marketplace. If I click on that, what happens is that brings me to the Visual Studio Marketplace, and it brings me directly to the Visual Studio Team Services tab, as you can see right here. And there's a number of extensions that are available on this marketplace. Some are free, some are trials, and some are compensation, there for compensation, for example. The one that I showed you, the workout and visualization, is right here. And if I click on this, it gives me a detailed view of exactly what's in it. So, you know, exactly how to use it, why it's important, those types of things. If I want to use this as part of my VSTS tenant, or even on my TFS installation, if I'm using the on-premises version, TF Team Foundation Server, if I click on install, this will install the extension on my VSTS tenant that I want it to be put on. If I click on download, it'll download a V6 file, a VSIX file. And your Team Foundation Server administrator can then use that V6 file as part of the TFS administration console, integrate it into the TFS administration console, and then that functionality becomes available to you. So as I said before, VSTS or TFS, it doesn't matter. You should be able to get the same sort of level of functionality as long as you're using the most recent version of TFS. And that's a really, really powerful thing for our customers, because some of our customers may not necessarily want to go to VSTS right away or have a plan to go to it, but they can't go to it quite yet. This is one way that they can get some of the functionality right away. All right. So now that we've actually moved our task to active, what we're going to do is we're going to go back to our PowerPoint slide and our matrix and find out exactly what we have to do next. So we've made the task, we've assigned it, and we put it to active. So now we're ready to actually do some development on it. At this point, what we want to do is we want to implement the code for that task, right? So we want to implement all the various different sort of logic associated with it and all those types of things. We want to do some unit testing and debugging. So we want to find out exactly if the change is going to work and things like that. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to commit this into version control. Now, my version control that I'm using is Git-based version control within VSTS. There's another type of version control that's been around in TFS since we brought that out in 2005 called Team Foundation Version Control, TFVC for short. It's around. You can use it. It's very, very, very viable. A lot of our customers use it today. But my choice or my personal preference was Git, so that's the way I've actually provided that within my project. So we'll see that in a little bit. So let's actually move to Visual Studio and move into this. So at this point, you can see that we have some code and things like that. The code that I want to change is specifically in the bundle config area here. So if you know anything about ASP.NET MVC, you know that one of the CSS themes that it uses with by default out of the box is something called Bootstrap. And there's a number of different open source or free versions of Bootstrap that are out there. The one that you saw is Yeti. That's the blue and white theme that you saw on the application itself. But as I said before, the user base has requested that we change this to a darker theme. So we've chosen one, and the one that we've chosen is something called Superhero, which is also a free one that's available. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to save this. So I have not yet committed it. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you a few other things here that might be very, very interesting, because I don't want to commit it until I actually do some testing. So the first thing I want to do is I'm going to bring this up and see if we can take a look and see if this theme looks slightly different now and palatable for that matter. So we'll just wait for this to come up. So now we're in debug mode. And hopefully soon we'll get the browser up. There we go. It's fine. We don't need to worry about that. So at this point, we're just waiting for it to show up. It's showing that we're doing script debugging. Okay, so the application is starting. And once it's started, we'll be able to see the new version of it. So hopefully it won't take too much longer. But the intent or the expectation that I have is that simple code change that we made will change that theme from a blue and white to the orange highlight and the dark gray background. So we'll just wait for this to show up. It shouldn't take too much longer. There we go. And there we go. Okay. So that looks a little bit different. Hopefully that'll help our users and make our users happy. So I think we're good for now. That's the debugging session that we'll show you. So we'll just exit this and just stop debugging. And I'll show you a few other things that might be very interesting to you. So if I go to the draftball.cs file here, there's a couple things that I want to show you that might be very interesting to you from a developer productivity standpoint. The first thing is that you'll notice here that within Visual Studio 2017, we have the curly braces, which is very, very popular or very, very common within C-like languages, including C#, which I'm using right here. Now, you'll see that we have some things such as, you know, these lines. And that's great because this gives me a view to see exactly what the code block is. So in this case, as I hover over it, you can see, and I'll zoom in a little bit, hopefully you can see that, it shows me that this specific code brace is the ending to this code block, which is defined here. In this case, it's a property of a class that we have here. So this is great because it means that I no longer have to scroll up and scroll down and scroll up and scroll down as a developer, because that's something that might be important to know exactly what you're closing the brace on. Now, what's also interesting here is you'll notice that we have these icons that are showing up. And specifically, you know, you see these check boxes and these minus signs. Maybe you'd see an X somewhere as well. Now, these are what are basically called live unit tests. So everybody is probably familiar, at least in concept, of what a unit test is. So you're basically doing very, very granular sort of testing on your code to find out, based on certain inputs, does the code actually provide output that is appropriate? And that's something typically you have to do manually. So you run the unit test, and you can see that there's a couple or four unit tests here, three passed and one failed, for example. Well, you can see here that there's these things around the code that shows which ones are covered and things. So you can click on this and say, okay, well, this specific line of code is covered by two unit tests, and both of them are passing. This is great because what this means is that as I'm coding, if I have live unit test on and running, as I'm coding, the Roslyn compiler within Visual Studio, which is a meta compiler, will actually analyze the code that I've just written, find out if there's a unit test that is associated to the code that I've just written, and run that code or run that unit test against that code automatically on my behalf, so that I don't have to actually go and run those tests myself. Now, you can always do that at a later date if you want to and explicitly run them yourselves, but this is a great tool that shows you what is working and what doesn't. Now, what you can also see here is this minus sign shows that it's covered by zero tests, which basically means that there's no code coverage for this specific thing. So maybe this is something that I need to create a unit test for. So it's a nice visual representation of that. The last thing I want to show you here before we move on is I want to show you something called Code Lens. Now, let me just make this a little bit bigger so we can see this. There's a couple things that might be really important for you to see here. So as I scroll a little bit here, if I zoom in, you'll notice, for example, there's this line that shows up here that's gray. And this line, as you can see, isn't code, and it's not something that I typed in or any other developer typed in. Basically, what this is this is meta information on this specific code block that is very, very useful for me to get a better understanding of exactly how this code is interacting with other parts of my solution. So if I go and take a look at this, let's work our way from the back. You'll see here that there's zero exceptions. And this is using exception information that I basically hooked into our production environment using a service called Application Insights, which we'll talk about a little bit later. You can also see that this specific code block is associated with five work items. So if I click on this, just wait for it to show up, it shows me that there are three user stories and two bugs that are associated with this specific work item. So basically what this means is that this code block has been checked in, the code for this code block has been checked into version control a number of times, and they are associated to these specific user stories or work items, just like the tasks that we created, which is kind of nice. I can also take a look at this from a different view, which is saying that, okay, here there are four different sort of code changes or commits, if you will. So anytime I've checked in code into version control, and what basically the various different sort of comments associated with that. And in fact, I can open this up and find out this specific commit is associated with, for example, this bug and these tasks or user stories, for example, as well. You can also see a code activity, and it shows me all the activity across the entire team of how many times this code has been checked in. So I'm the only one doing this demo, so you can see that I'm the only one showing up, but there'll be different color codings for different individuals on the team that might be touching this code, as well as specifics around when they actually checked in this code. So if I take a look at the latest one, if I hover over it, you can see that it gives me some details around the specific type of code that changed that we've done. The other thing that you can see here is we have the unit tests. So the same unit tests that you saw here and here are showing up here, and I can rerun them directly here if I want to. So it gives me a better understanding of how this code block is covered by different tests as well. The last one, and this is something that I find very interesting, is something called the code map, or the ability to find references. So in this case, there are 19 references to this property in this class across my entire solution. So you can see here, if I scroll around, there's a list of them, and that's great. You know, I can get all that. But I can also click on this thing called Show in Code Map. And if I click on that, what's going to happen is the Roslyn compiler that's also used for that live unit testing, for example, will do an analysis of all the code that's in my solution and find out all the references or relationships between this property, this code block, and all the other code that's in my solution, and create a nicely generated diagram that shows me how the interaction between each of these things is provided. Now, this is a very powerful sort of capability, because what this allows you to do is get a better understanding of exactly how the code is relating to other code in the visual representation. I find this is very, very useful when you have onboarding of different sort of new developers on the team, or if you just find that, you know, your application has become very complex and there's lots of moving parts and integrations between it within the code. This is a way to eliminate the confusion that's associated with what I call quote unquote spaghetti code, and actually get a better understanding of exactly how the code is relating to other parts of the project as well. So we can save this into version control as part of our solution if we want to. I'm not going to bother doing that. We're just going to not save it. And at this point, I think we're pretty good. So we did a unit test. We checked out, make sure everything was okay. We have our unit test here. We see that live unit testing is showing that it's pretty much covered in this specific file. So yeah, that's good. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to check in this code and bring it in. So I'm going to maximize this a little bit more, and I'm going to go to something called Team Explorer. Now, if you're familiar with Team Explorer, you'll know that this is a very powerful part of Visual Studio that allows you to have access to VSTS or TFS from your Visual Studio environment directly. It's also available for Java developers on the Eclipse and the IntelliJ IDEs as well. So you don't have to be a .NET developer to get access to Team Explorer. You can actually use this as part of your Java-based development platform as well. And we're always looking to bring on other IDEs as necessary. So this is something that's quite helpful. Now, specifically what I want to do is I want to look at the changes. And the only change that we made was to the bundleconfig.cs, a C# file that points to a CSS file that we have, right? So what I want to do is I need to enter in a commit message. I'm going to say changed the theme from Yeti to Superhero, okay? And what I'm going to do is I want to associate this code change to the task that we've actually provided. So if I go back to my task, and if I go into the task itself, you'll notice here, if I take a look at the title, you can see that we have an ID that's associated with it. Every single work item, whether it's a bug, user story, task, product backlog item requirement, issue or test case, whatever it might be, feature or epic, they all are assigned a unique ID. In this case, this one's 547. So what we want to do is we actually want to associate this specific task with the ID 547 to that code change that we just made. So let's go back to it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to click on this plus and enter in 547. And basically what's going to happen when I click add is going to go to VSTS and see if there is a 547 work item, and it found it. So there's that new task. And what I can also do here is click on queries. Now, queries are different ways that you can get at your data from a work item standpoint. So finding out all the bugs, for example, this is a way to find all bugs that are within my project. And if I want to say, for example, this is also fixing this one bug that happened. So I can drag and drop this over here too. So I don't always have to use the plus sign. I can drag and drop a number of different things. So that's good. What we're going to do is we're going to commit this, and we're going to commit it locally. So as I mentioned before, I'm using Git-based version control. And what this allows me to do is have a local copy of my version control on my laptop, in this case, my Surface Pro. And what I'm going to do is we're going to check this in locally. And then at some point at a later date, we're going to synchronize this change back into VSTS, into the central repository. So what we're going to do is we'll commit this all locally. There we go. In the same case, it's local, but you need to sync it to sync your changes with the server. But before I do that, let's actually move back to our slide matrix and find out exactly what we're doing next. So we've done the development part of things. So we've implemented the code. We've done a little bit of unit testing. So the live unit testing, for example, I ran the debugger just to make sure that, you know, for example, that new CSS theme is implemented and working on that site. I should probably do a little bit more unit testing, but this is a demo and we'll just leave it like that. And what I've done is I've done a local commit to Git-based version control, but I have not centralized, committed it to the centralized version control within VSTS. The reason for that is I've set up what's called a continuous delivery pipeline to my VSTS instance. And what this means is that when I finally check in the code to essentially into VSTS, it's going to kick off a build automatically. And then once that build is completed, it's going to automatically start the deployment of my solution to multiple different environments that I've defined. So that's the next step that we're going to show you. So let's actually go through and get to that next and get that going. So at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring this to the side. So we're going to do something side by side here. So I'm going to go back into my VSTS tenant. And if I go to the build and release area, what I want you to do is I want you to keep an eye out on this thing called draftsimulator.all.ci. And it says it's passing, which means that the last time I ran this build, which was earlier this morning, as you can see 4 hours ago, it said that it passed that build. So this is basically what's called a build definition. And the build definition is a set of steps that you define or your project team members define to in order to compile your solution and provide the right configuration and any sort of tests that might be involved with it as well. We'll get into the details of exactly how we built and authored that build definition in a second. But in the meantime, what I want to do is I want to synchronize my changes. So click on synchronize and click on it here. And basically at this point, the changes that I made are going to get synchronized into VSTS. So we'll just let this go. Now, you may be wondering about branching and merging as part of this. And just take a look at this as we're doing. There we go. It's in progress. So let me go to my build and I'll just start talking about the branching and merging in a second while we're waiting for this to go. So everything I've done in this demo, I've kept it really, really simple. So typically in a real sort of environment, you might not necessarily be checking code directly into the master branch, which is what I've done here. You may have a feature branch or a personal dev branch that you've created that is a child of the master branch or whatever you have, and basically making your changes off of that. So one of the things that's interesting is that, you know, you have the full ability to do that as well within Visual Studio Team Services. Create your own branches, merge and branch and merging strategies are all there as well. And you can have things like pull requests within Git-based version control, which are fully supported within VSTS. And this allows you to get a better understanding of exactly what your workflow is. So if you want to have a peer or code review set up within your solution, the pull request methodology is the right way to go from that standpoint. Now, as I was talking, you were probably watching the screen, and you can see on the left-hand side we have a number of different steps. So these steps are either automatically added to the build definition or ones that I've specifically created. And as you can see right here, we have a real-time console that provides me with some details of exactly what's going on within the build at any one point in time. So let's take a look at this and get a better understanding while this is continuing to build. I'm going to assume that this is going to work properly. So let's actually move forward. And if I click on this build definition, and if I edit it, what you'll see is the list of tasks that you saw in that other screen. So we'll just wait for this to show up. So everything from getting my source control from version control. And then you can see there's a number of steps that I've set up. So I'm using NuGet packages within my solution. So it's allowing me to get that information right there. You can also see I'm using MS Build. I have some automated test assemblies. And then finally, the last three are all about, you know, creating the symbols and copying all the configuration files and binary files into a drop folder that can be used for a deployment later on. Now, pretty simple stuff. And you can see each of these has its own sort of configuration that might be associated with it. If I need to add a task, it's very, very simple to create a build definition that is as expressive as you need it to be. So if I click on Add Task, and if I specifically focus on build, for example, you'll see that there's a number of tasks that are available here. So everything from .NET Core, you can see there's some Docker things, so it's not just about Microsoft. In this case, this one's deprecated and is there for backwards compatibility. I have some other ones that are more recent. You can also see Android, Ant, CMake. For example, we even have database DACPAC schema compares and things like that. There's some Docker ones here. Grunt and Gradle and Gulp and Jenkins and Maven. So there's lots of things for .NET, but there's lots of other things that are not .NET. In this case, you know, Node.js or Java and all sorts of things like that. So you may have a number of tools that you have in your organization today that you're using that you may want to continue using in conjunction with VSTS or TFS. And that's absolutely possible. We tried to make this as open as possible so that you can plug and play the tools that you want to continue using within your DevOps pipeline as part of this process as well. Now, you may be wondering, okay, well, that's great. I take a look at my own VSTS instance and I don't see some of the tasks that you see here. Well, how do I get them? Well, the other thing here is going back to that Visual Studio Marketplace. If I go back here and if I scroll down a little bit, you'll notice there's some build and release tasks. If I click on See More, you'll see that there's a number of tasks that are available. So the extension model for VSTS and TFS is not just about providing those capabilities for, you know, work tracking, such as that workout and visualization mechanism that I showed you. It's actually the ability to add build steps and deployment steps as part of this as well. And you can see, for example, there's a number of build steps. There's one even for Google Play and the Apple App Store further down. So you can automate the process of deploying a mobile app that you've created directly to those stores if you want to, for example. There's one for the Windows Store as well. Post to Slack is another one, for example. So the results of a build, you may want to post to Slack. Jenkins integration, as you saw on my list, for example. There's a number of things here, and you can search for other ones as you need. So if you don't see something that you might find that you would be helpful for your own build or deployment mechanisms, you can always search the marketplace to find out if there's something there that's available for you. And if you don't see something there that you find you need, you can always create your own, and we provide guidance on how to do that. So it's a very, very simple way of actually adding extensions, and it's up to you whether or not you choose to put this on the marketplace or keep it in-house. All right, so let's see how our build is going. Hopefully it's done by now. So if we go back to the summary, let's take a look and see. There we go. Yeah, it passed, so that's good. So let's take a look at the summary and see where we're at. So I'm going to show you a little bit of the information that's in the build summary. You can see it ran for just a little bit over 2 minutes, and it finished around 3 minutes ago. So it's been done for a while. You can see when it started, when it finished, typical things that you might expect. You can see the source version, which is in this case the single commit that we have. You can see that there were a few build warnings, not issues or errors, but build warnings. So I've set up my build to allow for a certain number of warnings to be allowed before we actually fail the build. So in this case, it met the threshold, so it stays as a passing build. So there's a few things there that I need to work on from my developer standpoint, so things I need to see. You can see the associated changes, and let's zoom in a little bit here so we can see this. So you can see the associated changes, which is basically the commits. So you can see here, this specific commit was associated to this build. If I had multiple commits in here, they would show up as a list here as well. What's also here is the associated work items within this change. So you can see, for example, we have this bug and this task. So the task was the one that we created, and the bug was the one that I dragged and dropped as part of my commit as well. So everything that I've created that's associated to this specific code change is basically associated right here. These are your release notes. So if somebody says, well, what's in this build? Well, you can just say, well, we fixed bug 485 and we implemented task 547, which is associated to whatever user story that you have, for example. So you can set this up and have this so that, you know, anybody that needs to know exactly what's in a build, you can find out exactly what the release notes are for that in an automated way. Now, the next thing I want to show you is if I scroll here, you'll notice that as I was talking and as the build had finished, it actually started the deployment. So I mentioned that the continuous delivery concept within DevOps, which is automated build and automated deployment, is also here as well. So I successfully checked in code into the master branch, which triggered a new build within VSTS to build the solution. And it's cross-platform, so it didn't have to be a .NET solution like I have here. It could be a Java-based application or a PHP application or Node.js or whatever it is that you choose to be building. And once that successful build completed, it actually kicked off and started off the whole deployment process. So you can see that dev and QA have actually successfully completed. Staging is in progress. It may even be done by now. And then finally, production is not deployed yet. Now, you might be wondering something here. So you notice here that dev, QA, and staging have automatically gone forward and actually started their deployments without me ever touching anything. You might be saying, well, that sounds kind of dangerous. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, depending on how you sort of set things up. That's because in the way I've set up my demo, I decided not to set up a workflow or an approval process for any of those environments. What I have done, however, is I've decided on the final one, I decided to create an approval workflow for production. So we are not going to actually deploy to production until we have an approval process that is accepted throughout the whole thing. So what this means is that, you know, before we deploy to production, we're going to do some testing and things like that as well. So let's actually take a look at this deployment and see what's going on. So release 151 is the one that we want to see. I'm assuming that the staging environment is now complete and we're waiting for deployment into production. So we'll just wait for this to load up. We're almost there. Yep. So you can see that dev, QA, and staging successfully completed. And you can also see here, there's an icon that shows up right here, but also you can see this yellow bar. A pre-deployment approval is pending for production. Approve or reject. So basically what this means is that I've set up a workflow that says before we touch production, we need to have an approval associated with it. And because I'm on this list of approvers, it basically is saying whether or not I want to approve or reject it. So we're not going to actually approve it yet, but I am going to show you what it looks like. So you can see here that this is showing that I'm on the approval list, but you can also see that Hannah, Marco, and myself, my alter ego with using my Microsoft credentials, are also here. So basically what this means is that I've set up an approval process that if any one of us approves this, it will kick off a deployment. But I could have equally set up this approval process to be every single one of us has to approve this before the deployment happens. Or I can set up a sequence of approvals. So I have to approve it, then Hannah, then Marco, whatever. So you can set this up however you want to. It's very flexible. And you can basically determine who needs to be on the approval list for any environment. I've only set it up for production, but that's basically the way it works. Okay, so we've done the deployment all the way through staging. And what we're going to do is we're going to go back to our matrix and take a look at where we're at. Yep, so that's basically what we were supposed to do. So before we go to production, however, what we need to do is we need to do a little bit of testing, obviously. So that's the next thing we're going to do. So we're going to go to our QA environment and do some manual testing and maybe create a bug if we find an issue. Hint, hint, right? We're probably going to find a bug. So at this point, what we're going to do is we're going to go back into VSTS and go through the process of doing a manual test. So hopefully you're starting to get a good understanding of exactly the breadth of capabilities that VSTS is providing so far. It's a very powerful tool. It works well with other tools as well, but we have a full end-to-end solution. And the next thing, as I mentioned before, what we're going to do is we're now going to go into the test hub. So now we just wait for the test hub to show up. Now you can see here, for example, we have a number of manual tests. So we're going to talk about manual testing to start. So as you can see, we have basically a test plan, is what they're called. And usually a test plan is associated to an iteration or a release or a specific, you know, phase, whatever you want to call it. And under the test plan, you have one or more test suites. And a test suite is a scenario that you're trying to test, or it might be a specific user story or requirement or product backlog item that you're trying to test. In this case, the one that we're highlighting here is actually a user story that we're trying to test. And within a test suite, you can have one or more test cases. Now we have two test cases here. We have the execute draft simulation, and we have navigate to homepage is the other test case. Now you might be wondering, why do we have duplication? Is this a bug in the actual system? And the answer is no. You can see here that we have different configurations for these test cases. So just because you author a test case once doesn't mean you need to create multiple versions of that test case just so that you actually can test your application under different browsers, for example, and different operating systems or different data conditions, for example. So what if I'm logged in as a regular user or as an admin or as an anonymous user, whatever it is, those types of things. There's multiple different sort of configurations and permutations on how you might run a test case. And VSTS allows you to determine what those are and display them for you so that you have a good understanding of exactly what's passed and what's not. So in this case, let's actually take a look at this one. And you can see, for example, we have what you would typically expect of a test case, right? So you have a title, who it's assigned to, the status, all those types of things. You have test steps, so each step. Each of the steps, you can have an expected result if you want. And in some cases, there might be a image or some data documentation or any type of attachment that you might want to include to help the tester have a better understanding of what he or she is seeing on the screen, for example. Now you can also see, just like the task, there's related work. So what's interesting about this is you can see that there's a number of bugs that have actually been found by this test case on previous runs. And you can also see that the parent in this case happens to be the user story, which this test case is associated to. So that's all good, because what this means now is that we can get a better understanding of exactly what's going on. Now let's click on X and actually run this test case. So all I have to do to run this test case is click on run. And actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring this one out. So this is here. Actually, just wait 1 second. Yeah, we'll do this. We'll click on run. So it's going to bring up this in a new box here. So if I put this side by side with the version of the browser with all this, you can see here's the test steps and the expected results. And in some of the cases, the attachments, which were PNG files and image files, you can see this. So let's actually go through and talk about this. So before we actually start this test case, there's a few things I want to show you up top here. So at some point, if we find a bug, we can create a bug directly from here, which is kind of handy. We have the ability to take a screenshot of anything on the screen that we see. We can even do things like get better understanding of exactly the activity that the tester is having. So in this case, we can capture user actions as an image action log, or I can even do a video and audio recording of the screen while the tester is actually running through the test itself. In this case, what we're going to do before we start the test is we're going to capture an image action log, and we're going to do it under this specific thing right here, this index page. So click on this. So basically at this point, what's going to happen, and you'll see this when we show it to you in a second, is it's going to show you when we take a look at the results of this, where I clicked in a snapshot view. So I get a better understanding of exactly what I did. But I could have equally done this as a video if I want to. And when the test case is done, it'll upload that image action log or the video and audio file that is associated with it as well. So it's really up to you. Okay, so let's actually run through this. So it's asked me to open up the browser, which I've already done, and we got to navigate to the QA site. So you can see here there's a QA site, so let's actually run through this and let it run. Now, just because this is the first time we've run this, run the application under the QA environment since we actually did the deployment, might take just a few seconds for it to show up. So what we're going to do is we're just going to assume that that step passed. So we'll just wait for that to come through, but hopefully we'll see it. And just like what you saw when we went through the debugging session, it should show up with the orange up here and the dark gray background down here. So there we go. Well, that's good news. So far, so good, right? So the next step that we have to do is on the top of the tab menu of the page, click on Draft Run. And you can see here the expected results here. There's the image. And if I hover over it, it shows me in a really crude circle exactly where I should be clicking. Now, I don't see that here, but I happen to know, because I've done this test a few times, that there is a hamburger menu here because this is a responsive website. So I'm just going to click on Draft Run, which happens to know here. So I'm not going to say that this is not that step fails. We're just going to say that step passed. And while we just wait for this to happen, and again, because this is the first time we're accessing the draft results page by since we deployed it might take a couple seconds for it to actually load. So while this is going, let's take a look at what we should be seeing next. Oh, there we go. So the selected first draft team should appear, and the team name, logo selected on the draft number, the four draft ball values should be present on the screen. So let's take a look at this. Let's just go directly to their draft winner. In this case, it was Moncton Magnetics out in New Brunswick. So, okay, the team name. Yeah, we have the team name. The logo selected. There it is. And the four draft balls that you can see here. So all the data's there. But if I take a look at this, take a look. The look and feel looks slightly different here. Okay, so we have an issue. So I've talked to my test manager, and she's basically told me that this is the new look and feel that we should be expecting to see. So obviously we have a problem. So I'm going to fail this test step, and I'm going to add a comment and say, the QA site looks vastly different than the wireframe. So at this point, there's my comment. I'm going to basically fortify that comment with taking a screenshot. So you can see here, just wait for this to show up. There we go. There's my screenshot. And I can annotate this. So maybe I'm going to say, well, this entire area is different. Okay. So I'll add it. Say this entire area is different than the wireframe. And say, for example, there was an issue, and I can say, for maybe there's the draft balls show up here as ping pong balls rather than just numbers. And if there was some sensitive information, maybe I don't want the team name to show up, and maybe I don't want the logo to show up either, just because, even, there we go, just blur that out. I'm going to click on the checkbox just to show you this. Okay, and there you go. So now this screenshot's now attached to this. So what we need to do now is we need to say, okay, well, this is a problem. It's a bug. So we're going to actually click on this to create a bug. So at this point, we have a new bug, and I can say QA UI is very different from wireframe expectation. Okay. So let's take a look at this. I'm going to assign this, because I'm a nice person, I'm going to assign it to Marco. And at this point, you can see that it's a new one, and that's the only option that we have. But let's take a look at repro steps. So automatically, what it's done, because we've run this through a test case, is it's saying, okay, step one passed, okay, step two passed, step three failed. There's a comment that I created, okay? And in addition to that, we can see that the attachment is there. And we don't have any sort of details for step four, because we never finished it. Now, what you can also see here is you can see that the system information was also grabbed when I created the bug. So as soon as I created a bug on the test frame, it actually grabbed the environmental information of my test machine. So it knows that I was using Chrome 60, the locale, the screen resolution, so the, or should say the browser width and height, not the screen resolution. You can see the operating system, this operating system architecture, so it would know if I was using ARM or Intel, for example. You can see the available memory, as well as the screen resolution. So all things that might be really interesting and very, very valuable for a triage person to understand exactly what went on there is available as part of this. In addition to that, you can also add other sort of test harness information, or not test harness, but log information. So if you know anything about something called IntelliTrace, which is a deep level logging mechanism for Windows machines, if you're using a Windows based application, you might be able to associate an IntelliTrace log file and attach it automatically to the bug, so that your developers can then actually use that to do a debugging session on the testing session even after the fact, which is kind of helpful, and as well as other things as well. So at this point, we're going to save and close this bug. Okay. And what we're going to do now is we're going to say, okay, now we need to stop running the image action log, or the recording. So we'll click on stop there. And we're going to fail the entire test case, which we've already done. And we're going to save and close this. Okay, so now let's actually take a look at this. Now that we've run this, what I want to do is I want to take a look at the test runs that we've done to date. So if I take a look and take a look at test runs, it'll show me the most recent ones that are available. So I'll just wait for this to show up. And you can see the one that we just ran just a few minutes ago is there. So if I double click on this, it shows me that I ran this one out of one iteration. So if I needed to run this under different browser conditions or different data conditions, as I said before, you may run this test over on you know, in a number of different sort of iterations. We only ran it in one iteration, so that's why it's showing the outcome has failed one out of one times. I can take a look at the test results. So just like I had on the bug, it shows me the test results, including the repro steps that you can see right here. There's a screenshot, for example. And you can see here that step four we never found out. But you can also see here that there's the action logs. So the system information that you see here in this JSON file is basically what you saw in the bug. So all the environmental information is also associated here. So you don't have to go to the bug necessarily to find that. But you can also see here the action log that we recorded. So let me take a look at this just so you can get a better understanding of what that is. I'll open up the HTML file. And you can see here we have, you can see, hopefully you see this crosshair. I'll zoom in so you can see it a little bit. So you see this crosshair that shows up. That's basically saying exactly where I pinpointed my cursor when I actually clicked on this. And you can see I did a draft run and I clicked on the draft winner. So it shows me all the different activities that I had so that if I'm someone who's looking at what the tester actually did, it gives me a better understanding so that if the tester did something wrong, for example, maybe he or she forgot to click a checkbox before running an account list or something like that, and that caused an error. Maybe this is a good way to find out whether or not that is an actual error or if it's an expected result instead. So it's another way of validating, you know, how the tester did the work and things like that too. Now let's actually take a look at this. And the other thing that we can do is once we took a look at this and we say, yeah, this looks like it's a valid test run, we're going to say that there was an issue with this test run because it failed. We're going to say that there was a failure and the failure is a new issue. Okay. The resolution is we're going to say it's a product issue and it's going to say UI designer forgot to check in his wireframe or his new UI framework. Okay, click on okay. So there we go. So now that's basically the run with that. So now that we've done this, the next thing that we want to do, if we go back, is we've done the manual test and we created the bug. Now what we want to do is we want to go back to production. Maybe this is slightly different than the way you do it, but we're going to do it this way. Is that bug that we saw, yeah, it's a problem, but it's not enough to stop us from actually moving forward with our deployment to production. So at this point, what we need to do is we need to actually deploy to production. So we'll do that. And then once that's done, we're going to do an automated load test and monitor it with telemetry in production as well. So the next thing we need to do at this point is we're going to go back to build and release. If we take a look at this, you can see that we're waiting on this specific production approval. So click on this and I'm gonna say found a bug, but still going ahead with a production run or deployment. Okay. Now, because this is the last stage, maybe I want to defer this deployment to a date and time that's appropriate. Like say, for example, Saturday at 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever, you can do that. We're not going to do that here. We're just going to automatically start the approval process here. So I'll click on this. And while this is actually running, let's take a look and see what this looks like. So just like the build definition, which defined the steps for deploying for building your solution, we also have, in this case, draftsimulator.all.ci deploy.web. It's basically this deployment definition that I created. And as you can see, it's in progress. And if I click on this, you'll notice here, we have all the information from our previous. So dev deployment, QA deployment, staging deployment. Now we're just actually moving into production. So at this point, it's just waiting for the agent to spin up. There we go. And once the agent is started, you can see it's actually has a live console, just like the build engine, because actually the build and deployment engines are one and the same. You can see in real time. And of course, obviously, if I want to see any of these things down the road, so you can see here, if I click on this, it gives me all the log information that was shown on the console for when the staging deployment actually happened, for example. So in addition to this, now what we can do is I want to show you exactly how this sort of looks here. So if I click on this one, and if I edit this deployment definition, it'll show me all the various different sort of steps and environments associated with it. Now, you can see on the left-hand side, we have what are called artifacts. And these are basically all the inputs into my deployment. In this case, we only have one artifact because it's a very simple deployment mechanism that we've decided to implement here for this web application that I've created. And that's literally just the drop folder. And so basically the binaries and the configuration files and all those types of things associated with it. That is an input into my dev environment. And then my dev environment, once it's successfully completed, I basically decided that I want my staging and my QA environments to deploy in conjunction with each other in parallel. But once staging is completed, it automatically moves to production, but it waits. And as you can see, there are pre-deployment conditions. So it's going to wait based on the fact that I've defined some approval processes associated with it. So pretty simple. Now, if I actually want to take a look, for example, at my dev environment, you can see here all the steps associated with dev. So I'm going to stop my web environment in Azure websites, basically deploy the new code into the Azure web application, start the web application again, and then maybe run some tests. And just like in build, if I want to add more tasks associated to it, all I have to do is click on add a task. And you can see here, and I'll go to the deploy area here specifically, there's a number of deployment tasks that are available. A lot of them are based on Azure, as you might expect. But there's other ones as well. So you can see here, there's some third-party ones like Chef and Octopus and even Puppet, for example, if you wanted to. Docker deploy, mobile applications and things like that. You even get rollback. So you have the ability to set up and define a rollback mechanism. Should anything in your deployment fail, you know, you might want to revert back to the previous version that actually worked, which is important because you want to limit the downtime that your users actually experience, whether it's on the new version of the application or going back to the old version. So you have the ability to do all that as well. And just like that, you know, deployment, you also have the ability to make use of utilities. And this is true of also build as well. So you can see here, there's bash scripts, command line. You can do PowerShell, bash for Linux and also for Windows now. A number of other things as well. So it's really up to you, whatever types of utilities or deployment capabilities that you might want to have as part of this as well. So that's great. And one of the other things that common question is, okay, I see, Paul, that you have pretty traditional sort of structure here. You have a dev, QA, staging, and production environment. Is that what we have to use? And the answer is no. You can have one environment or you can have many, many, many environments. It's really up to you, and it's basically defined by what your processes are. You can define as many environments as necessary for you to actually do your entire deployment pipeline as necessary. All right, so let's take a look at a deployment. Let's see if this is actually finished. I imagine it is. So just wait for this. Yep, you can see now it says a post-deployment approval is waiting. So it's actually gone through and done the deployment, but now it's waiting for us to approve, saying, yeah, everything worked well in the deployment. Now, we're not going to approve that yet because we're going to do a few things here. And one of these things that I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to test. And instead of going to test plans for manual testing, I'm going to do a load test. And the load test that I'm going to be doing is a cloud-based load test. So one of the things that we've added within Visual Studio is a way to make it really easy to build out load tests that might be appropriate for you to use. If you know anything about load testing, you probably know that load testing can be a complicated process. It requires you to do things like create a what's called a test rig. And a test rig is basically a set of network-connected PCs or desktops or virtual machines even that basically consist of a controller machine, which basically orchestrates your load test, and then a bunch of agent machines that are connected to that orchestrator that actually push that load out to whatever target that you want to. Now, Visual Studio allows you to do an on-premises load test just like many of our competitors do. But one of the things that we do that makes it really easy is you don't even have to worry about those test rigs if you use our cloud-based load testing. And that basically means that you author your load test within Visual Studio, and I'm not going to get into how to do that today. There's lots of content on how to do that. But once you've authored that load test and run it, it gets uploaded into your VSTS tenant, and that becomes now a new load test that is available for you to run on demand as necessary. And that's what I'm going to do here. So you can see here, we have something called draftsimulator.executedraft. And this is a test that I've actually run in the past several times. And what we're going to do is we're going to run it. But before I do that, I'm going to show you some of the things that are here. So you can see it's a very simple load test. Basically, what we're doing is we're going to the home page, and then we're going to execute a draft simulation, find out who won, and then at that point, go back to the home page again. So the settings for this load test is I'm basically going to run it for 1 minute just because we don't want it to run too long for this demo. I'm going to use a constant load pattern, but I could have equally done a step load pattern, which basically means if I click on this, you can see have a maximum number of virtual users of, in this case, 200, but it could equally be like a million, for example, if you wanted to. Start at a certain number of virtual users. Every certain number of seconds, step up the number of virtual users by this amount. And also maybe have a warm-up as well. So if you want to have a warm-up process to make sure that, you know, you're not getting bad results because maybe you've just done a deployment like we've done here, for example, that might be important to understand. So let's actually go and we're not going to bother saving this. We're just going to go back to the draft simulator. It's going to say, no, we want to, we don't want to save that. And we're going to run the test. Now, before I run the test, there's one more thing that I want to show you. So if I go back to my matrix here, we're going to do the load testing, but what we're also going to do is we're going to monitor our production environment. And I'm going to use the load test to basically generate some load to show. And we're going to use a Azure service called Application Insights to do our monitoring telemetry. Now, I've hooked in Azure Application Insights into my application, and it's a very cross-platform telemetry platform for applications. So I have an ASP.NET MVC application. It could have equally been any kind of other web application, Java, PHP, Node.js, HTML5, whatever, or it could be a desktop application or even a mobile application. So lots of different options there that you can make use of for application insights. I just happen to be using an ASP.NET MVC application for this, so that's what we're going to monitor in. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kick off the load test. So we're going to run it, and as you can see right here, what's happening is it's queued the load test. And what's happening now is it's actually uploading the load test into the cloud using the cloud service for load test. And it's going to start provisioning the agents based on the settings that I have within my test. So you can see it's configuring the agents now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this side by side. And I'm going to bring up this. And I'm going to go to my live stream here. So now I'm in the Azure portal. And what's happening is we're just waiting for the load test to start. And you can see one of the things that Application Insights provides is telemetry based on, you know, various different sort of things associated with your load test. Let's see, it's actually configuring the load test right now. Once this starts kicking up, you'll start seeing that there's a lot more activity on this. So this is a real-time view of exactly what the load is or what the activity is on my web application. And as you can see right now, there's not a whole lot. But hopefully soon, oh, there we go. So we can see now that it's actually in the process of running the load test. You'll start seeing here that it's going to start populating some load. And as you can see right here, we're starting to get a little bit more telemetry. So you can see here that, you know, the CPU usage went up, for example. We have some things. So there you can see that, it gives me the response time and stuff. As this moves forward, because I'm using a very small database for this solution, you might actually start seeing some errors show up here. And this will allow me to get a better understanding of exactly some of the things that you might be seeing here. So let's just wait for the remaining 18 seconds of this load test, and hopefully we'll get some telemetry that we can take a look at. So you can see there's some information here that's providing some good things here. And wow, it's pretty good. You know, our failure rate's actually been zero, so that's good. So that means that we have some pretty good activity here. So just wait for this to finish. There we go. So we're going to get back to Application Insights in a second, but what I want to do here is I want to show you some of the things associated with this. So you can see that there's some charts within the load test. So it shows me the throughput and the performance, the errors, for example, and things like that. So you can see that there were no errors, but there was a user load of 100 virtual users and things. I can get some diagnostic information, as well as any of the logs that came back from the load test. I can get that information here as well. Now, what's also interesting about this, if I go back to execute draft test here, and if I change the filter from the last 7 days to any, I can also do some baselining. So this is the last time I ran the test that I just ran right now. Maybe I want to baseline this from the last time I ran it, which was just around a week ago. maybe a little longer ago, I can basically select these two and compare the two runs. So I can baseline across any sort of these runs, and you can see, for example, all the differences between the two. So it gives me a little bit of a better understanding of exactly what's going on within my application from one deployment to the next, for example. Now, I mentioned Application Insights, so let's take a look a little bit more at this, and I'll maximize this so we can get a better view. So if I go back to my Application Insights tenant that I've hooked into this, you'll see there's a number of things here. So as you might expect, Application Insights provides telemetry on performance, on health of your application, even provides application telemetry on usage. So how popular is your application, and is your user base or the user community that you're targeting with your application, is it actually hitting the mark with them? So you can see, I showed you the live stream, for example. I have some alerts here. So you can see here that there was an issue. Maybe we can take a look at this. And you can see I have an automated web test within my Application Insights, which basically pings my website with a transaction, for example. And it's showing that, you know, when I ran this test from the Japanese data center, so I can run this from multiple different data centers around the world that Azure has. And actually it shows that the 2 days ago, when it ran the test, it actually said that the website was down from that data center. So maybe there's something I need to know to see there, for example. You can also see, for example, there's a smart detection here. So this is interesting. This is showing that there's some information about smart detection in things. And just a second. Wait for this to load up. It shows, you know, an abnormal rise in exception volume. So it's saying, you know, there's a significant increase in uncaught invalid error, for example, for expected token in the past 7 days. So it gives me some details that might say, okay, well, these are some things that maybe you might need to take a look at. So it's actually doing pattern recognition and pattern matching on previous behavior within your application so you can get a better understanding of exactly what you might need to focus on, for example. So this gives me a little bit of a better understanding of exactly what's going on, and I can take a look into this as part of something that might be required for me to take a look at. What's also interesting here is you can see, for example, the application map. Now, the application map is a really useful piece of functionality within Application Insights because it gives you a view of your application based on the calls that are happening internally within your application. So as you can see right here, this is my application right here, which is basically covered by the DrawSimulator.web Application Insights tenant. You can see 3,500 requests over, you know, that many. There's no failures, which is good. You can see on the left-hand side are the clients that are accessing my application. In this case, the first one that you see here are two different availability tests. So I have an availability test within Application Insights called AppUp and one called IsAlive, and they're both 100% passing over the past day. You can also see here, for example, that there's also browser-based sort of implemented. So you can see there's 17 errors and 43 page views. And if I click on this icon, and this icon shows up on a number of different places in Application Insights. This is our analysis capability. So it opens it up in a new tab on the browser, and just wait for this to show up. Not sure why it's actually asking me to log in again, but we'll do that. Hopefully I put in my password in, right? Looks like it. So at this point, what we're going to do is it's going to bring up the Application Insights dashboard and show me the details around that client errors, for example, or the client details. So you can see, for example, the page view count. That's what it's showing here. So if you can see, just rendering the visualization. So you can see that there's this sort of SQL-like, it's not SQL, but it's kind of like SQL. It's a little bit more like a Lambda expression, if you will. With C Sharp, for example. And you can see at this point, there's a number of different sort of things that you see here that show, you know, all the different customer activity and things, which is kind of nice. And in fact, what I can do is if I want to go to the home page, there's a number of queries that are built out of the box that allow you a better understanding. So if I want to take a look at the top 100 countries by traffic, you know, you can see that United States is taking most of them, United Kingdom, Anonymous, Ireland, and then there's some in Canada as well. So it shows me, for example, all the traffic here as well. And you can save your own queries, for example. You can modify these and then save them as your own queries as well. It's really up to you. So let's get out of the application map, and I'll show you a couple other things here that might be interesting. So if I take a look, for example, at the server response time, I can drill down into anything within Application Insights. And that's one of the beautiful things about it. As you can see, for example, it shows me, you know, do my slowest operations correlate? So it's showing me, you know, whether or not things are actually happening and things. So you can see this one get execution draft run slash index. So at this point, this is basically getting information directly from my code. And if I drill down into this, it'll give me some more details. For example, you know, the dependencies cause it. You can see there's some leading questions here that give me some details. In this case, you can see, for example, the performance. There's some that took a long time. So there's some that took like, you know, up to 30 seconds long. So let's actually click on this and find out why that is. So you can see 61 requests have, common properties and things like that. What I can do here is I can click on this, or I can click on the specific different sort of instances of these things and drill down into it. And as you can see right here, just wait for this to show up. You can see some of the reasons why. You can see, oh, there's calls to remote dependencies here. I have 5 calls to my Azure database within this one transaction. And you can see one's taken 5 seconds, one's taken 4, 3, 2, and then, you know, a little bit longer here, a little less long here, for example. So this gives me a little bit of a detail of exactly what's going on. And in fact, what I can do is I can drill down into this specific one. So if I want to see this one, take a look here. It shows me that, okay, this command that actually took 5 seconds was basically executing a stored procedure. It took this amount of time. It was successful, but it took a long time. But I can also do things like find out the telemetry 5 minutes before and after the event, which is kind of interesting too, because if I find that this is happening often, I can get a better understanding of exactly what's happening before and after the event as well to see if there's some issues here. So you can see, for example, 6 custom events have 7 calls. So I can drill down into this and find all the different custom events. So everything I've shown you so far, for example, is what's out of the box when you include Application Insights in your project. Custom events is basically where you actually have situations where I've actually defined code within my actual code. So I've custom coded some events into Application Insights from my application as well. So you can see that there's this drill down capability that gives me a very, very good understanding of exactly what's going on. The last thing I'll show you very, very quickly, and this is just a very quick view of exactly what's going on, is you can see here, for example, if I take a look here at retention, this shows me how often my users are coming and how often they're coming back, for example. So if I click on this, it might take just a couple seconds for this to show up. But what's interesting about this is that, you know, you can get some really, really deep level sort of insights, and that's why they call it Application Insights, into exactly how your application behaves from a performance, health, as well as from a usage standpoint. So as this is loading up, what you'll see is probably some charts that show you, for example, the return usage, like users that commonly return, how long they spend on the site, and those types of things as well. Yeah, so you can see, for example, you know, the cohort number of users and how many returned from 4 weeks ago and things like that. And you can also see, for example, the returned events, so like how long, like where they spent most of their time and things. So these are all things that are provided to you out of the box that give you a very good understanding of exactly what's going on in your application. What's interesting about this is that this allows you as an application delivery team, not just a developer team, but an application delivery team, to bring this data back to the business so that you can provide data back to the business saying, we don't think that what you thought this application was for example, is really what the users are using it for. You thought they were going to use this piece of functionality, but the data is saying that they're actually using this other piece of functionality, for example. So lots of different options there and opportunities for you to manage that. All right, so let's actually move back to this. And now that we've done our monitoring and telemetry, we need to do an approval because we're going to say, okay, well, yeah, we did the monitoring, telemetry, and the load test. Everything looks okay. So we're going to do a post-approval. So let's actually go and do that now. So if we go back to our build and release, and we take a look at the approval. By the way, all these approval processes, I get a notification on email as well saying that there's a new approval process or approval waiting for me as well. So I can click on the link in my email and it'll bring me there as well. So at this point, we're going to say, load test was good. We have go ahead to finalize the deployment to production. So we'll approve that. Okay, there we go. And at this point, there we go. We've actually completed the full deployment to the four environments at this point. So let's actually move back. Now that we've done the post-approval, now what we need to do is finalize this whole process by moving the task to a closed state because we've actually implemented it. So let's go back to work. And this is a really satisfying thing is we've done all that work and we have a number of different team members that worked on this. And now what we can do is just drag and drop this over here to closed. And there we go. Our task has actually been implemented end to end. And we've actually done some telemetry and monitoring as well and just for good measure. So really, really powerful tool that you can use end to end as necessary. So just to sort of summarize what I showed you, well, we talked about work tracking using Kanban board and queries and the product backlog item. I showed you some of the capabilities of Visual Studio and some that are actually brought into Eclipse and IntelliJ as well as other IDEs to help your developers become more productive with VSTS and TFS. Then we also talked and showed you in great detail a continuous delivery pipeline, which includes automation for build and automation for deployment, or also known as release. And then finally, and that includes approval processes and things like that, as well as the ability to extend your build and release pipelines by using extensions within the Visual Studio Marketplace, for example. Finally, we talked about, or not finally, but we did talk about testing, including manual testing, as well as load testing. And there's other automated testing capabilities that are there as well, but we never really got into them in this demo. And then finally, monitoring and telemetry once you've actually reached your deployment into production. Although we could have done monitoring and telemetry in any environment, we just decided to do it in production only. The one last thing I actually want to show you before I forget, because I think this is really neat, is if I go back to this, if you remember that work item visualization extension that we had, and I showed you the fact that the task that we created was associated to a user story, and that user story was was associated to a parent feature, for example. If I click on this and go back to visualize, we'll see that same sort of thing. Okay, there we go. Oh, and you can also see here that this specific thing is related to this. And that's because basically I put that as part of the comment that I made to Marco within the discussion item. And if I do this, there's a parent to that. But if I decide to filter on changes in files, you can see here, for example, the commit that we made, so the code change that we made, is also associated to this as an artifact link. And if I click on this commit, I can find out exactly all the files that are associated with this. So if I want to go to bundle config, for example, and take a look at this for just 1 second. Well, I clicked on the wrong button, but basically if I right clicked on it, it would actually bring me to the version control version that shows me the file associated with that as well. So lots of really interesting things associated with that. Now, the last thing I'm going to talk about is just how to get started, because I think there's a lot here. We spent the past hour and 40 minutes, roughly, maybe an hour and a half, going through, frankly, in a quick way, even though it took a while to get there, a number of different capabilities in VSTS and TFS. Now, if you want to get started yourself, there's a number of different links. If you're viewing this on Channel 9 or on YouTube, for example, we'll provide these links on that page. But if not, you can just go and copy these links out, and it gives you details on exactly how to set up, you know, VSTS and TFS to the way you need to do your work as well. So with that, I'll sign off. I just want to say thank you very much for investing the amount of time to listen about this. Hopefully you saw some value in it. And definitely good luck and have fun with your own DevOps capabilities within your own organizations, hopefully with VSTS or TFS. Take care.